The Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, for $20 off your first tickets. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. Warning, this podcast contains explicit language.
My friends would say I'm annoying, but yeah, I think so, yes. It's always a weird question for me to answer because it's sort of like, do you think you're pretty? So you agree, you think you're really pretty. It's like if you say yes, you sound kind of full of yourself, and if you say no, well then why are you on a comedy show? So I'm going to just go for it, Richard. Yes, I think I'm funny. A comment like, what is this? To me is like, yep, that person, that's good. That's a good comment. I would rather see, I wish everybody's reaction to their first time seeing Garbage Time is, what the f*** is happening on my television right now? Because to me, that's a rave review. It means I don't get it, I'm engaged with it, I'm watching it, and I recognize how different this is. I think I piss people off. You know, I think it's fine.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we feature interesting conversations with interesting people about the sports media and the process of sports media. This podcast hopes to both entertain as well as make you a more educated sports media consumer. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer, as always, is Bette Marston. And we dedicate this podcast to Allison Parker and Adam Ward, two young journalists who were murdered today in Virginia. We are taping this on a Wednesday. My guest this week is the Fox Sports 1 personality, Katie Nolan. She hosts Garbage Time with Katie Nolan. That is a weekly Sunday night show featuring Katie Nolan as a solo host. Fox Sports Management gave the show a 20-episode run this past year and recently announced it will come back for a second season. It combines comedy and topical conversation and takes about the sports world. Katie Nolan has a very interesting viewpoint on all of those things and is one of the unique people in the business in that she is a woman solo hosting an opinion show in sports. That does not happen frequently. I mean, it quite frankly rarely happens on television. So she is a pioneer in that sense, and we look forward to talking to her. Thank you for the great feedback on recent shows, including Bomani Jones, Fred Gadelli, and David Shoemaker, a.k.a. The Masked Man. You can catch any episodes of the SI Media Podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud. And please let Bette Marston and myself know any feedback you have for us on Twitter. I'm at Richard Deitch, R-I-C-H-A-R-D-D-E-I-T-S-C-H. Bette Marston is at Bette Marston, B-E-T-T-E-M-A-R-S-T-O-N. Hit us up on both. If there's any production issues, please yell at Bette and not me. All right, Katie Nolan is in, I believe she's in New York City. And without further ado, let's head to Katie Nolan of Fox Sports 1. Okay, and as promised and as hyped on Twitter for the last couple weeks, we bring in Katie Nolan of Fox Sports 1. Katie, thank you very much for doing the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Richard, thank you for having me. I was excited to hear you say, as promised. That's become your catchphrase.
Yeah, that's really quite a big catchphrase that's going to sweep the country.
Yeah, I think you're nailing it.
How would you describe, Katie, what you do on television?
Oh, God, we're just going to jump right in, huh? You know, Richard, I would describe what I do on television as fun, sports-related, comedy, that sometimes is informative, sometimes is silly, but it gets to the point of what sports should be or used to be or that people sometimes forget is, and that's just fun.
You know, when you get tagged as being someone who's a humorist or there's an expectation that you must always be funny, strikes me that there's pressure that comes with that. So whether it's on Garbage Time, whether it's in a radio appearance, whether you're doing the those Canadian guys in Los Angeles' podcast, How often do you feel pressure when you do an appearance to be funny?
I'd say it depends on what the appearance is. That's the interesting thing about my position and the job that I'm in right now is that I have this duality. So if I'm doing a funny radio show or a podcast or something, usually that person has me in there to be the sports person who, you know, deals with sports every day, knows sports, eats, sleeps, breathes, chokes on sports. And so I'm there for that, but without being, you know, a hard-headed analyst who's going to be too serious. Or if I'm doing a hard-headed analyst show or that person is serious, I'm usually expected to, you know, bring some levity to the situation, which is actually, I mean, it's tough when somebody expects anything from you, and having to meet people's expectations is something that, you know, a lot of people always struggle with. I mean, it's external pressure, but I would say having the ability to sort of oscillate between the two is a blessing and a curse because it allows me to be, you know, to wear various hats depending on what the situation calls for.
Is finding humor in sports hard or easy or both?
I would say, it used to probably be easier, and maybe that's just because I was paying, you know, not such intense attention to everything that was happening. Of course, it's tough now with the all the issues that have been happening in the past few years, especially that have come to light in the NFL and other leagues with athletes. It's tough, but, it's necessary. Sometimes things lend themselves more easily to comedy. Sometimes you sort of have to find the humor in spite of the awfulness, which has been, you know, one of the reasons comedy's existed for so long is that it helps you deal with some of the awful things in the world. So I would say some things are easier with sports and then other things are a bit more of a challenge, but no growth comes unless you're challenged.
All right, Katie, by the way, I should ask even before I ask this question, but do you consider yourself funny in real life away from the camera? Are you someone who is, would your friends say that you are a funny person?
My friends would say I'm annoying, but yeah, I think so, yes. It's always a weird question for me to answer because it's sort of like, do you think you're pretty? So you agree, you think you're really pretty. It's like if you say yes, you sound kind of full of yourself, and if you say no, well then why are you on a comedy show? So I'm going to just go for it, Richard. Yes, I think I'm funny.
You know, you told New York Magazine that you love to curse. We're 6 minutes into this podcast, and you have not dropped any kind of curse yet.
I'm growing up right before your eyes.
I feel like this is a bit of a corporate kind of Katie Nolan. Maybe the Fox Sports 1 people got to you a bit that, you know, we call that sort of talking points prior to a podcast.
You think they gave me yes, talking point number 2 right here on this list says, Katie, you are funny.
Nice. All right. People like, for this podcast, hearing about process. The last guest we had was a guy named Fred Gadelli, and he went through his week, basically, of how he prepares Sunday Night Football. So for those who watch Garbage Time, I think they would find it really interesting to find how much probably goes into the show that they don't realize. So as specific as you can be, can you take us through a week of how you prepare for the show that airs on Sunday?
Sure. It's interesting because obviously the only thing I have to compare it to is the only television show I did before this, the long-running and well-beloved Crowd Goes Wild.
Multiple Emmy winner, correct.
Yeah, multiple Emmys. And that show was obviously different from anything I'd ever done before because it was my first TV show, but it's also strikingly different from what I do now because it was daily, it was live, there were 6 panelists, there were 20 to 30 different producers, we had meetings and conference calls, and it was all very top to bottom. Now, we have a weekly show. It's only a half hour. It's just me. And then I have a team of 4 producers. And those producers have to wear basically every hat. So they are producers / editors / bookers / sometimes camera operators. And so all of the trials and tribulations that come with that obviously do. So I guess to run you through a basic week, and also keeping in mind that we just started being a show 20 episodes ago, and this probably changed 5 or 6 times throughout the series. But so our weekday would start on Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on if something huge happened on Tuesday. So we would come in, and have a morning meeting around, you know, morning for me is 11. that's about as early as I'm getting into an office. So we would have a meeting. We would run down, you know, the main stuff that happened since the last show. We would go over what we liked and didn't like from the show before that. We really didn't ever dwell on that too much, which we learned pretty quickly we needed to go back and fix things so we didn't make the same mistake twice. But so then we would run through the stories that happened. If anyone had anything they were feeling particularly passionate about, or if they had come up with something already that just jumped into their mind of something really funny, we would pitch a couple ideas. But mainly the purpose of that meeting was to just go over what we liked, hone in on a couple stories, and then assign, you know, each producer would sort of run point on a main story for a segment. And so mine would always, I usually owned the A block, which for those not in the biz, is the first thing that happens before commercial. So on our show, that was usually, at the beginning it was monologue jokes, and then for lack of a better term, and trust we've looked for one, rant, where I would, you know, take a stance and, you know, pontificate on it for a few minutes. I usually took that and ran point on that because it was so based in my opinion that it would be tough for somebody else to write that for me.
Right.
Whereas the other producers would say, you know, take a field segment and own that, and they would get the cameras booked and or learn how to use a camera so they could film it because we couldn't afford a camera crew, or they would book a guest or write a game. And then Thursday or Friday, we were usually pre-taping. So if we had a guest that was going to be a guest that week, we would do that Thursday or Friday. If we had a field segment, we shot those Thursday or Friday. Or if we had any pre-taped pieces that I would throw to from the desk, we filmed those Thursday or Friday as well. And then usually Saturday morning, we got in around 8 or 9. Even myself, I got in at 8 or 9, which means I got in at 9:30, as late as possible. And then that day was always just a hectic mess. We would sit and go over the script and finalize any monologue jokes, which we eventually ended up kind of getting rid of. But we would pick our favorite monologue jokes. People would pitch last-minute jokes if they had any. We would rehearse the show, which would be I would read through the script while they tried to get the camera angles where they were supposed to be, and then we would lock those in because we don't have dynamic cameras, so they just sort of stay in one spot. Then I would go into hair and makeup, change anything in the script I didn't like from before. We would try to get a sense of where we were at with time, which was a thing I was completely unfamiliar with before this show, because I did live TV before. So with pre-taped stuff, it was very difficult to make sure we hit a certain time, especially without the ability to have, like, a control room. It turned out to be very difficult. So then we would usually tape the show around 2, on Saturday, and that would wrap up around 4, depending on how much stuff we had to actually tape that day and how much of it was pre-taped from the week before. Then we would go into editing, which was a hands-on, very complicated and long process. We would usually wrap that around midnight, and then sometimes still come back the next day and do a couple more hours, because we don't have the ability to roll in graphics the way a normal television studio would. So when you watch TV and you see over-the-shoulder photos on, let's say, John Oliver or John Stewart or any lower third graphics, they have that rolling in while they're filming. You know this, Richard, obviously. But we don't have that. So we just have a camera and me. I have to play react to fake non-existent graphics, and then afterwards we put them in and we roll tape in. And so that takes a long time. So that was why we would tape on Saturdays as opposed to Sundays, which proved to be a little difficult when stories would break on Saturday night, which a show that airs on Sunday nights should be able to address. We couldn't because we had already filmed our entire show. And then Sunday we would air, and then Monday and Tuesday we would sleep.
I appreciate that explanation. I got a couple questions.
It's so boring. There's no way that isn't super boring.
No, people like everyone, by the way, after they describe their week, says it's boring, and it's not boring. It's actually among the more interesting things in this podcast because people don't live in that world, and they find that interesting. But for a new show, even though it's a new show on a name sports network, was it difficult for you to get guests? And if yes, how did you do it? If no... if no, then answer why it wasn't difficult.
luckily, Yes, it was difficult, so I'll have plenty to dive into here. Yeah, it's tough because, you know, it's a new show, a new network, and a new person. Like, who is Katie Nolan? It's not like, you know, Michelle Beadle gets her own show, and it's like, oh, it's Beadle. I love Beadle. I haven't made that many connections yet, so I don't have, you know, I'm no Jay Glazer. I don't have a phone full of NFL players. I don't have a lot of, like, let me call in a favor. So even when a lot of shows don't have anybody to book that week, they can still say, okay, well, I'll just call, you know, such and such, and they'll come do the show. I don't have that yet. So we actually ran into, I think we did one episode, maybe two, where we didn't have a guest. And that was because we couldn't book anybody or because we were being offered people that we easily could have said yes to. But one of the things I took away from Crowd Goes Wild, which was, you know, again, a daily, 5 days a week show, sometimes we had two guests on that show, and it got to a point where it was really heavy lifting for the staff because the guests we were booking, you could tell we booked just to book a guest. And I knew from the jump with Garbage Time that we only had 20 episodes, and I didn't want to spend any of them doing something because we had to. I wanted to make sure that it was something that if we got canceled after 20, I could look back and say, you know what, we did what we could, it was fun, it was great. I didn't want to ever be like, sure, we'll take that guest because we are supposed to have a guest, and that's the only guest we can book. So there was one week that we didn't get anybody, so instead we came up with a comedy segment, which actually ended up being really funny, and we all sort of bonded over the fact that we didn't have a guest. For the most part, our bookers have been really, really great, and I don't know how they've managed to get people to do our show. Like, most of the time when a guest leaves, I just profusely thank them for doing something that they definitely had no idea what they were getting into. And so the other goal with that, knowing that how difficult it was to book guests, when we did book a big name, it was really important for me to make sure that even though our studio is really small and the experience might not be top-notch television, it was important for me to try to make these relationships with people and make sure they did something they really enjoyed and had fun so that either they would tell their friends or they could later, if something happened, they would think of our show, just to try to slide ourselves into front-of-mind presence for bookers, for agents, and for talent.
The guest is Fox Sports 1's Katie Nolan, the host of Garbage Time. We will take a quick break to pay some bills and be right back with her. Okay, the NFL preseason is in full swing, and it's the perfect time to go to a game at a fraction of the regular season price. Our sponsor, SeatGeek, is going to sweeten the deal with a $20 rebate when you use my code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, in the SeatGeek app. It takes less time than a minute to download, and the app is free on iPhone and Android smartphones. Now, SeatGeek does a ton of things that other ticketing sites don't. You can organize hundreds of sellers at your fingertips. Just like when you search for flights and hotels online, SeatGeek is able to pull up ticket options from hundreds of sellers to create a one-stop shop for sports and concert tickets. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket option available for that game, all on one page. No need to go anywhere else. There's also a very cool feature called Deal Score. It ranks every ticket on the market with a 1 to 100 value score and plots the best deals on a color-coded interactive map of the venue so you can easily identify the best ticket values in the building at a glance. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. On SeatGeek, you can store your credit card, and once you find a ticket you want to buy, you can complete the purchase with just two quick taps. There is no faster way to buy tickets for concerts and sporting events. To redeem your promo code and save $20 on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, in the app, and SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. Okay, back with Katie Nolan. And boy, it was just really incredible theater in this studio as we tried to fix the levels during the break.
Yeah, really. I mean, tech guy saved the day,
we'll
whatever
say.
His name was.
Yeah, it's Alex. It's Alex, yeah. The tech guy. I apologize to the listeners if this doesn't sound good, but blame Fox and Jamie Horowitz. All right.
No, we just blame Richard. Richard's fault.
Yes. All right. So, Katie, you mentioned the guests and what it was like for you as a first-time solo host getting guests. The one thing I did want to ask you about, and I want to get into women, you're a unique pioneer, I think, in this situation in terms of being a woman opinionist on a major sports network. But before that, you know, it's interesting to me when people on television self-evaluate themselves and how and when they watch their own performance. So did you watch the show live on Sunday, or at least when it aired live? And then during the week, would you also rewatch it to try to pick up things? How did you self-evaluate yourself?
So I would watch the show when it aired, whatever time that ended up being, on Sundays, live, when it would air. And I would watch, mainly I was watching it to watch Twitter and other feedback I was getting, and to see, you know, like to have something to reference it to. So I would watch the show also to make sure the final edit came out good, to take notes on what happened, but less to evaluate myself because I wasn't distanced from it enough at that point. I also was watching it to watch the reactions of people I watched it with, because I took that into consideration, because it's different than Twitter. You know, Twitter, you can feel a certain way, not tweet it, but if you're watching with somebody and you see them laugh and really laugh, you know that was, you know, something that really landed. I've actually recently started going back, because we've had August off, so I started to go back and watch episodes from the beginning, which is a really difficult thing for me to do because I don't like watching myself on video. It just makes me uncomfortable, and I don't I don't know, without revealing too much about myself, I don't think I'm that great. And so watching things back, I needed to give myself the distance between when we filmed it and when I'm rewatching it for evaluation, so that I would watch it as if it were happening for the first time, instead of going, oh, I know what's going to happen next, and sort of skip through it. So that's how I mainly would evaluate myself now, you know, to go back and learn from what we did, and also to look through, you know, notes that I took throughout the week. I kind of kept a running journal, which I've spent August digging back through and being like, oh, I remember when I felt that way. Good thing I wrote that down. I would have forgotten that happened. That way we can address these sorts of things before we start back up again.
When you're watching Twitter during the show airing and you see negative comments about something on the show, how does that make you feel?
Well, you know, no one reads a negative comment and it's like, yay, I feel great. But I've learned to sort of, I'm starting to not read Twitter as much. And I've noticed, shockingly, that it makes me a happier person who's more in touch with real life. But for the purposes of analyzing the show, the definition of bad feedback is a little bit different for me than somebody else would probably define it, because with the show being so new and so different from not only anything probably that's happening on the network before our show, but also just any sports network, really, it's just so weird that a comment like, what is this? To me is like, yep, that person, that's good. That's a good comment. I wish everybody's reaction to their first time seeing Garbage Time is, what the fuck is happening on my television right now? Because to me, that's a rave review. It means I don't get it. I'm engaged with it. I'm watching it, and I recognize how different this is. Now, that person could then, 5 minutes from then, be like, I'm done, and change the channel, and that's fine. I was more looking for what parts of the show prompted people to react, positive or negative. I would love to take positive. I wish they were all positive. But mainly the purpose of watching Twitter wasn't to feed my ego or to feel like it was doing well. It was to sort of observe the trends of what segments did well, especially in comparison to what segments we really thought would do well, and just see how they landed with people, to sort of analyze it from more of like a numbers standpoint than an emotional standpoint.
I know you can only answer this question from the prism of being a 20-something woman, but...
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me about being a woman.
No.
I knew it.
It's not about being a woman, but it is. Why, in your opinion, have sports television outlets been reticent to give a woman or women a forum to offer sports opinions?
I don't... that's really tough for me to answer because I am not in the position to really speak on that because I haven't, as you can see, had as much of resistance to that. I mean, it's absolutely true, and I don't know why because I'm new to this industry, so it's tough for me to look back and say, here's what happened and here's why it happened. I'd say that's more of a question for your boy, Horowitz, or maybe somebody else in a suit. All I can speak to is my experience, you know?
All right, so for your experience then, you have not, for you, you have not encountered people not giving you the opportunity to offer, to be given a forum to offer sports opinion, correct? So maybe that's progress. Maybe someone who's 28 hasn't had that resistance that, say, a 35 or 40-year-old woman in the business has.
Absolutely. I mean, the women who came before me who have you know, for lack of a better stupid metaphor, blazed a trail, have made my job significantly easier. My job is not easy, but I guess the hope is that whatever I do will make it easier for the, you know, hundreds of thousands of millions of women to come after me. So, look, women have worked really, really hard to be taken seriously in sports for a really long time. And one of the things I noticed when I came along was that when I'm out here being silly or doing silly jokes, there was a lot of feedback that I got about how I was setting women back or using my looks or, you know, damaging the progress that's been made before me. And I understand that reaction, but for me, it was more the opposite. This isn't, I'm not stepping women back. This is actually the logical next step. Like, if you look at men in sports, they can fill a number of roles. It isn't prove you know something and then you have to only be able to show us how smart you are. It's you can be smart and funny. You can be silly sometimes because we trust that you know what you're talking about. And women have fought so hard to be taken seriously that my goal or what I want for my gender, for women as a whole, is to be able to have that duality that men get to enjoy. So the women who came before me and the women who are doing it now who are doing amazing things that I wouldn't be good at. You know, I'm not Doris Burke, and she is phenomenal, but we do very different things. And so her existing and, you know, Rachel Nichols existing and thriving and fighting that fight have made it so that we can now get to the point where if somebody can, you know, if a young woman growing up who doesn't identify herself as an athlete or a serious journalist but still really relates to sports, maybe now she can watch TV and see someone she can relate to who's like, wow, she knows sports, and she's just having fun and enjoying herself, and she can be smart sometimes, too. And so it's more about just rounding out the role that women can play in sports media from what it started to where it hopefully will go.
That's well said. I want to ask you one more question along this same thought, and that is, historically, male executives in sports television, and those are the people who historically manage sports television, tend to look at women in their 30s and 40s and certainly 50s different than they look at women in their 20s. There's elements of ageism, sexism, these are my words, plenty of bullshit that exists in this medium. How much, if at all, and I realize you're still in your 20s, do you worry about whether you can do what you do on TV at 38, 48, 58?
I would say if I'm worried about what I'm going to be doing when I'm 38, 48, 15, it's because I'm worried television isn't going to exist. I'm less worried about if I'm going to be able to get a job because I have saggy boobs. It just doesn't concern me. I'm not really, I don't think that, and part of it's me being naive. Like, I don't actually put any stock in my looks. I understand that that's a thing that happens for people who watch television or who, you know, observe trends in television, and I'm not denying that it exists. I just can't. I mean, what's worrying about it going to do? Worrying about it will actually probably give me more wrinkles, and then I would probably lose my job by 40. So the only reason that I worry about the future is because I really don't think cable television is going to look anything like what it looks like now, 20 years from now. And I'd like it to, so I could keep a job. Would be nice.
You may just be, we all may just be working for Netflix or Hulu or
yeah, something. I don't know how it works, but someone's going to need to explain that to me.
You seem, Katie, to have an immense talent of drawing out some older male writers to weigh in on your work. Here is Phil Mushnick of the New York Post.
Oh, God.
Yes. In Katie Nolan, host of the well-named Garbage Time, Fox Sports 1 has what it clearly wanted, a young woman to attract and excite a young male audience, no older, wiser, or better adjusted than 14-year-olds on a mission to spray paint their junior high.
What?
Yes. Continuing on, the always fantastic Jay Mariotti tweeted, Fox Sports knows no bounds in insulting sports people. Katie Nolan, or at Katie Nolan, I should say, less equipped than at Marge Simpson. I don't even know if there is an at Marge Simpson. I'm no stranger to Jay Mariotti blast myself, so we are in the same club there. But when you for whatever reason, for someone who has not had a show for very long, and for someone who certainly is nowhere near as high profile as other people in the business,
you seem to
have attracted people taking some blast. Why do you think that is?
I think I piss people off. You know, I think it's fine. I don't mind it. I love it. I don't do it on purpose. I think it bothers people. I just think that it's, you know, it's old men yelling at a cloud. It's change. I don't like it. Get off my lawn. The one thing that's bothered me, I guess, about, I think it was Mushnick. I actually am not sure. They all kind of blur together into one grayish, white, slightly translucent, wrinkly, liver-spotted blob to me. But he continuously references, and the only time he brings me up is to mention this one segment I did for No Filter. It wasn't even for Garbage Time. It was for the web series I did before Garbage Time called No Filter. And we would do daily limericks, which was a silly, stupid thing we came up with because I actually don't even remember who it was. Somebody, I think it was an owner or something, tweeted out like a limerick contest. And so we decided like we should do a daily sports limerick because they were fun and silly and stupid to write. And there was one I wrote that was like talking about the Jets and, you know, it's the way the rhyme scheme, however it works. There was Jets and then like forgets. And then we said that Geno Smith throws like he had Tourette's. And so, is it the funniest joke ever? No. Is it maybe mildly offensive? Yes. It's a reference to something that people suffer from. I didn't find it to be incredibly insensitive, but whatever. He mentions it in every single article. Katie Nolan, who mocks sufferers of Tourette's, and it just got to a point where it was like, you haven't watched anything I've done since that one thing. And when everybody starts talking about me, you just throw that line in there. And it's gotten to the point where it used to really bug me, and I was like, what have I done wrong? And at this point, it's like, what if I did that one thing wrong, and he's not going to move on from that one thing. And so it's not worth me continuing to worry or to try to fix or change in any way or to even analyze, because if you just keep your head in the sand and think what you think and you don't adapt or grow or read any new things or consume any new things that I do, your opinion of me is never going to change because I still did that one thing you're angry about. So I don't know. You know, I think I make people angry.
Yeah, and Mushnick doesn't like rap, so maybe he was really more angry about the rhyming as opposed to the content of the rhyme.
That's definitely what it is, because I showed a promising future in rap in those videos, and he must just, I mean, he also doesn't like the future, so he's really just not into anything I'm into.
Yeah, although Mariotti's far worse. On the scale of people you've bothered,
the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Jay Mariotti, if the day he likes me is the day I'll quit.
Yeah, I would. Same here. That'll be a bond between us. I would agree with that. Usually, if someone like Mariotti is criticizing you, you're doing well, or you're going to heaven. All right, let's move on to what has Fox Sports management, the suntanned, very wealthy people in Los Angeles, told you about the future and direction of Garbage Time as it heads to the second season?
Well, I don't know what you know, and I don't know what I'm supposed to say, because last year, I'm really bad at this, Richard. I'm bad at the, like, Katie, you weren't supposed to say anything until we ran it by PR, and we scheduled a rollout, and because last year when we launched Garbage Time, or however many months ago it was, I'm just going to call it last year, it was March, leading up to it, they kept saying, we can't say anything yet, we can't say anything yet. And, of course, I just found out I got my own TV show, so I'm like, I just want to say something. And then while I'm waiting to say something, those Canadian dudes, Jay and Dan, went on their podcast and were like, Katie Nolan got a new TV show. And so they ended up ruining it. So, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to just tell you everything and good. Probably get a phone call from a suit if they're listening. We are coming back. What month is it right now?
We're in August.
Okay, we're coming back September 9th. We're moving to Wednesday nights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, an easier night to do, considering that football season's coming up and covering football that happens on Sunday on a pre-taped on Saturday show that airs on Sunday just wasn't going to work. So we're moving to Wednesday nights. We're moving to midnight Eastern.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and we're also trying to move to, you know, pre-taping less in advance. So hopefully we'll be filming them on Wednesday, airing them on Wednesday, and September 9th is our first episode. And I'm really, really excited about it. I don't know anything. It's the tough thing about being the only person in New York when everyone is based out of L.A. Like, even they hire Jamie Horowitz, and he moves from this coast to L.A. Like, no one's around. So the benefit of that is that there's less oversight. There's less meetings with suits, which, if you guys are listening, I love meetings with you guys, but I hate them. So that's the benefit. But the downfall is I really am not involved in, like, I don't really know what's going on big picture network stuff unless I pick up the phone and call someone and talk to their assistant and leave a message and miss their phone call the next day. And there's just it's the communication back and forth isn't as strong as for somebody who's in LA, for better and for worse. So I don't know where Garbage Time is fitting into the grand scheme of things. I don't know what the new direction of the network is going to be now that we have Jamie and guys like Charlie Dixon on the team. I don't really know much of what's in the pipeline, but I guess the good thing about that is I don't really have to worry about it so much. We have so few people. We have such a small staff that work on our show that all I really have to do is put my head down, work on making my show as good as possible, and then just keep my fingers crossed that I don't get bumped for, I don't know, the Hooters beauty pageant part two.
All right. Well, first of all, a couple of things there off, and Bette was smiling too as we heard this. I think that is I think that's a great move for your show. Because I think Wednesday is ultimately better than following MLS where, you know, if a game runs long or game runs into extra time, you have no idea when your show is going to start. I think it's great to sort of be a late night presence on Fox Sports 1 where the terrain is empty and you guys can create something unique and interesting there. And I would also say ratings pressure is off at midnight as well. They want you to get some buzz and they want you to maybe get viral. So it's not like you're going to be charged with the same kind of ratings pressure as a 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock show. So my instant take, whether that means anything or not, is that is good. In terms of what Jamie Horowitz thinks, I've referred to him as the Lord Voldemort of sports television many times in print. So I don't think he'll be calling me for, thoughts on your show, or maybe he will. Maybe it's...
I mean, I have to, and you know me, Richard. I will never come to the defense of a white guy who's in charge of a sports network.
Right.
But I have to say, my experiences with Jamie Horowitz now, I know you guys are like wrestling enemies.
Right. He's great. He is great. Listen, I would always say this. He is great with talent. He's a charming guy. So I have no doubt that your experience with him is probably great.
Some people would say that, but I think his experience at the Today Show shows otherwise, that he can sometimes maybe be not great with talent.
Certain talent.
He is such a... He's a very smart man, and he's also very, and I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe it's, he's, you know, you've got to be nice and please the talent. I guess I
You are, I mean, I know you don't like hearing this, but you are talent.
You're right. It's,
whether you
want
to admit that or not,
it's not,
you are talent.
Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's just really hard to go from being a literal nobody to all of a sudden having to respond to being referred to as talent within a matter of years. It feels very weird and uncomfortable for me, and I don't know that I'm ever going to go, yes, I'm sorry, I'm talent, and not be sarcastic. But so, when, just to give you a quick Jamie Horowitz story, if I may.
Please.
When I was, it was the night of the Republican debate, and I was getting I got a tweet that was like, what is happening on your network right now? I'm embarrassed. And so I'm like, what are they talking about? So I switched to Fox Sports 1, and I see this Hooters women's beauty pageant thing, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is not even remotely sports. You can't even are you, except for the fact that their breasts resemble the balls used in sports. Like, there's no argument that this is sports. And so I, in a moment of, like, something I probably shouldn't have done, I was tweeting at Fox Sports 1 saying, what is this? And then I took a moment, I texted Jamie this big, long text that I'm sure he did not enjoy receiving from me, just basically saying that I felt, like, how can I do my job when this is what's on our network, when I'm not on TV, and that it makes me look like a hypocrite for associating with a network that would associate with this, and all this stupid, big, long, had a few drinks, kind of angry text. And he called me. I didn't answer because, A, I hate talking on the phone, but, B, I thought he would, like, know how drunk I was. So I didn't answer, but he sent back a very long text message that was like, I'm in the middle of moving. I didn't know what you were referring to. I called someone to find out, and I heard something about Hooters. I didn't know this was happening. I will talk to the necessary people. I completely understand how you feel, and I really, really appreciate you feeling comfortable enough to let me know that it upset you. Which, like, he didn't have to do that. He could easily have said, deal with it, Katie. It's our network. Like, this is what's happening. Or he could have passed it on to another person because he was busy. He's moving. I'm not saying he's a saint or that he's the best man in the world. I'm just saying it's nice to have a person I know I can go off the rails to and let them know how I feel, and they will hear me and respond. I know his reputation precedes him, but my experience with him so far has been surprisingly great.
I like that story, and I have no doubt that that he liked you as well. I will say this. You seriously may have been the only person in the country watching Fox Sports 1 that day with the Republican debate.
No, I'm telling you, somebody tweeted it at me. So without that person, that person was watching. That person loves tits.
But now, Bette, I believe that Katie has passed Joe Buck for the most curses on this podcast.
Woo-hoo!
Which is kind of awesome.
Yeah, but Joe Buck dropped an F-bomb like
because I
2
asked
minutes
him to.
Into...
Oh, right, because I just thought it was amusing that Joe Buck would curse in the first 10 seconds of a podcast.
Damn it, Buck. He's always trying to outdo me.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so we have a couple more things to get to, and then we'll let you go.
Okay, am I talking too much?
No. This is a podcast. You're supposed to talk.
Okay.
It's not Serial, but it's the same idea. Your executive producer is Michael Davies, who is famously a part of the Men in Blazers duo. What people maybe in the Men in Blazers world don't know is that he's the head of a big production company or a mid-sized production company. So how does your production company? So how does he differ as a producer than an on-air performer?
That's an interesting question. As a producer, I mean, Michael Davies is a television genius. He has been involved in so many successful television shows that I forget about them sometimes. Like, someone will make a reference to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I'm like, why are we talking about this? And then I remember, oh, that's because Michael Davies was the producer. He's done so much, and he has so much experience, and there's so much to learn from him and what he knows and his process and his, you know, just watching him make TV is really interesting. How he differs, like, you mean like what he's like on TV, if he's like that behind the scenes?
No, I'm curious. I mean, he's obviously been a very successful producer, but he's the rare producer who also is successful on air. So I'm curious, when he's not in his Men in Blazers role, what's he like as an executive?
I find Michael Davies a little bit of a very different and very British kindred spirit of mine, in that he doesn't like his on-camera stuff. I don't think, I don't want to speak for him, but he doesn't enjoy being on camera as much as he enjoys making television, which when I started, I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a producer. I didn't want to be on camera. It's just the path that happened, and I would never be a person who gets a job offer and goes, no thanks, I'm going to wait for a writing. Like, I'm going to take whatever opportunity comes my way. I'm kind of like a yes man. But Michael, when he does Men in Blazers, he's very, you know, business about it. He gets it done, and then he goes right back into his office and starts producing other television shows. So I actually don't know where he finds all this extra time in his week. I think he's paying someone to, like, slow time down because he gets so much done, and he's away so much, either for another show or going on a trip for Men in Blazers. I just don't understand how anything ever gets done in his world, but it does.
Talented guy. All right, I want to ask you about Bill Simmons, who you were on his podcast way back, well, maybe not way back when, but you are on his podcast in the last 12 months. And as part of that conversation, Bill Simmons made it clear that he was very interested in hiring you. That led to the story about you being possibly traded to ESPN for, Marty Smith and like a fax machine or something. It gets confusing in terms of who you were going to be traded for. But it does lead me to Bill Simmons's future now. He'll be at HBO. He recently announced his podcast is coming back, though he did not announce where that will be. And I think as someone who you follow the media and you know Simmons, do you think he will be successful away from a mega marketing machine like ESPN?
Well, that's a tough question, and I'm honored, I think, that my input would matter or be interesting at all. I think so. I guess I would say I hope so, because it would be nice to see that. HBO isn't like an up and coming. HBO is a huge name. I think they're going to be just fine. I also think it's going to be great to have him on the documentary side of things. I think that's going to create some very interesting television programming that I'm excited to watch. I think Bill's a super talented guy who's been around and evolved for a really long time. I met him like twice. There's this like air that we're really good friends, which I will ride that tide and let people think I'm really good friends with Bill Simmons. But I have nothing but respect for him. I think he's done something amazing. I accidentally followed his exact same path, so I will thank him for that, I guess. The bartender to blogger to television person path. I think we're kind of seeing an interesting time in sports media where people are sort of, for whatever reason, one reason or another, kind of moving away from ESPN and starting to use a number of different options or a number of different platforms. I don't know if that's in all television, and I'm just noticing it more in sports because I'm so immersed in this world, but I think this is a really, I guess playing for the team I play for, I would say this is an exciting time in sports media to just see what happens in the coming years and start to see if ESPN stays the one-stop shop worldwide leader or if it starts to become more of an a la carte situation with other sports networks.
Well, the reason I asked about Simmons, on top of the fact that you have that history there, is that the New York Magazine story wrote that you were texting him.
I know.
Back and forth.
Such a douche.
Well,
it
comes off like you two are your boys, basically.
No, and that's kind of, if you read between the lines, when you see that I show her that I got a text back from him, that was my way of being like, yes, thank God he answered, because I looked like a total idiot if I sent a text and he didn't answer, which is what I was expecting to happen. So it was like a stupid little humble brag that then got printed, and I was like, you moron, this is why you should just shut your mouth.
If he asked you to collaborate, whether it's collaborating on a podcast or something else, is that something that would interest you in the future?
Yeah, if my contract would allow, definitely. I've been trying to get Bill to come on my show since he stopped working at ESPN. I was very like, hey, you said that we were friends, right, and that you liked what I do and you'd do anything to help me out. Why don't you announce where you're coming back on Garbage Time? And he just didn't respond because I think it was like, you're being ridiculous. I'm obviously not going to do that, but I will reach back out to you when I can.
I will say this. I really would like you to pursue trying to get him as a guest on Garbage Time this year. He probably won't come on, but I think you should make the attempt, if nothing else.
I make the attempt every day, Richard. I wake up, I brush my teeth, I text Bill Simmons. Someday that will pay off.
Katie, who would be the ultimate Garbage Time guest? What guest would reflect the ethos of the show?
I think at this point it just has to be Rob Ryan, right? Like I think at this point we've built him up to be my white whale so much that, quite literally, if he comes on the show, I actually don't know what I would do. I build things up to a point where it's like with Rob Ryan and with Bill Simmons, like if we ever get them on the show, I have to knock it out of the park. So then I start to stress about, like, I have written interviews and segments we could do with guests we will never get just in case we get them so that we don't ever underachieve. And it's like, you got Rob Ryan and all you did was this. So we are constantly thinking of things we can do with super famous people. So if that person ever one day shows up, we've got it already planned.
Listen, I don't mean to sort of come off naive here, but you do work for Fox, which is one of the biggest media broadcasters in the world, owned by News Corp. There are a million connections with Fox and the NFL. Why have you not gotten Rob Ryan yet would be my question.
I don't know. I think the restraining order probably factors in.
Right, that doesn't help.
No, I think it's just it's probably a matter of timing of them not wanting to do it too soon, or maybe, like, I don't know. You got if I started my own show and week two got my dream guest, it would be like, cool. That's there's nothing to live for anymore. I just would have let them cancel it right away. I would have had everything I ever wanted. I think Fox is more, you know, if they're going to call in a favor, they want to, you know, call it in wisely. You're going to call in a favor for, like, the Fox NFL pregame show. You're not going to call in a favor for Garbage Time. They don't care.
Will we see more of you on the America's Pregame, the Fox NFL Sundays, the other, Fox Sports Live, as Garbage Time rears up again? Will we see you on other Fox outlets?
That's certainly the goal. There's a lot of stuff on the network that I would love to. It's just this part of me being in New York that's a real pain in the ass. Like, I don't travel much out to L.A. I love traveling. I hate traveling for business. I'm really a homebody, so I like to come home at the end of the day and be in my house, like, with my things and my people, and hopefully very soon my dog, because I'm going to get a dog. I really want a dog, Richard. It's National Dog Day.
That shouldn't be that hard. I mean, it's America.
I know. Well, I had a lot of weddings this month, and I didn't want to have to constantly leave a puppy at home. So once this month is over, now I'm just talking to you like you're one of my girlfriends. But it's been tough to be able to do cross-network stuff or things across the network because I'm not there. And it's tough for them to plan in advance for, okay, what week is Katie going to be here, and how can we use Katie? So that's been a bit of a challenge. But it's one of the things we've been working on with this month off is ways to get, like, a way I could appear on a show live from out here. So
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say, why can't you get one of those Adam Schefter cameras in your home kind of thing?
Yeah, that's the goal. Well, yeah, not home, because I filmed videos in my house for long enough. I think that would give me PTSD and I would flash back. But even just our studio, our tiny little studio, we didn't have, I don't know the technical term, but we didn't have the capability to run a line basically to L.A. So when I wanted to do talkback things, like I did America's Pregame once the week when Peter Schrager was hosting and we talked about Deflategate, I had to go to MLB Studios in Secaucus and do it from there because we just didn't have the capability from our studio. So in this off-season, we've been sort of working, I keep calling it an off-season, in my months off, we've been working on ways to make it easier for me to appear in other things on the network because it makes the most sense. We're also trying to come up with ways, different platforms for me to use, because the negative thing about having a once-a-week show is I can give you an example. The Boston Olympics bid, we have a really small team. I don't know if I've said that enough. So when I want to research something or do a well-researched take on something, like an A-block, sort of reminiscent of a John Oliver or John Stewart, a lot of that I have to do myself. I have to do the research. I mean, I have producers to help me, but we don't have a research team. We don't have a writing team. We don't have footage rights. We don't have a video archive team. So it's all me Googling or one of them helping me Google. So I was working on a Boston Olympic bid and why Boston shouldn't get the Olympics, and it's probably three-quarters of the way through this huge research project, and then it didn't happen. So it just, that sort of stuff gets flushed down the drain. And so for this next iteration of the show, we're trying to figure out different platforms or ways for me to publish or post content throughout the week so that it's not like if you don't address it on Wednesday, it better not get changed by next Wednesday because you won't be able to talk about it. And we've been experimenting with whether that's a podcast or smaller videos that are YouTube videos throughout the week. We're trying to figure out right now how we can sort of use me more to keep the wheels turning so it isn't like I work on Wednesdays and then I get dusty until Wednesday and then I work on Wednesdays. You know how it is.
Peter Schrager's going to love that name drop, let me tell you.
I love Peter Schrager. Have you had him on this podcast yet? He's the best.
He's not. He's no offense to him. He's not really an A-list guy. He might be more of a C-list kind of guest.
Oh, did you just in a inadvertently call me A-list. Did you just compliment me?
Well, I would say, to be honest with you, whether you're A-list or not, I would tell every one of my guests they're A-list.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah, so you have to sort of make the guest feel good. All right, a couple more here, and then we'll let you go. Are you one of those New England Patriot fans who believes that everybody's against you because of Brady, Chris Mortensen's the enemy, et cetera, or are you a little more realistic here?
Well, I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat about it, Richard, but I think this has been manufactured into a much bigger controversy than it is. And if you don't agree with that, then you're not paying enough attention. It just seems like everything that's been happening, once the documents came out from the hearing and we got the transcription of the hearing, which I read, I'm not going to say I read all of it, but I read like 50% of it, and that was 50% more than I should ever have had to read of that stupid document. But what I learned is you just see that it looks like the commissioner or the league or whoever it is, they just don't really understand what's happening. And there's no general understanding of basic facts, and then things are getting misconstrued. The whole thing feels really phony. It feels really tired. And I think a lot of people hate the Patriots. I don't think there's some conspiracy that the whole thing was, you know, planned and figured out. And I just think this is Goodell looking for a win, and I hope that he doesn't get it. Because, you know, if he gets it, if the judge rules in the NFL's favor, then we're screwed. Because the CBA expires when? 2020, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then that would mean that anybody that wants to take somebody to court, that the NFL can just go, you can't challenge our CBA because that's what it says in the CBA, so we win. That's crazy.
Not to put words in your mouth, but if it was you, then the Patriots get a fine, but Brady gets no games, or am I off on what you would adjudicate here?
If I were the judge?
Yeah, or if you were, let's figure, you don't want to be Goodell, but if you were the commissioner of the league in this situation.
Like when it originally happened?
Yes.
My original take was I would have given him one game. Show that Brady's not untouchable, show that he did something wrong, show everybody else that we know you're doing it too, you're not going to get away, you'll get one game to maybe like change people's, you know, because quarterbacks have been doing this. They make the balls how they want them. And if I'm Goodell in that situation, I would then go back into my rule book and change the rules so that this wouldn't happen again. I'd make sure that the referees use the same gauge. I would make sure that they record the measurements. They record the temperature. Everything is measured in the same environment. I would make sure if I'm going to hold people for making those, you know, living up to these rules, I'd make sure the rules make sense and that we're enforcing them properly.
I'm totally with you. Would have gotten one game for me and we'd be done with all this nonsense.
Why are we still talking about it?
Although I will say it's basically, having been in Boston or right outside of Boston the last week, it's 24/7 Deflategate. So Boston media has gotten a lot of run out of this story. So it has
helped.
All right, here are the final two topics, and we'll make these short. You've given us a lot of time.
Is this a nice way of being like, shut the fuck up?
No, if it was up to Bette and I, we'd have you for like 100 minutes. But I mean, at a certain point, you have to be, I think, fair to the guest. Bette, I'm actually trying to think off the top of my head who the longest podcast was Adam Schefter and Rachel Nichols, who went, you told me, way too long, right?
Well, because we combined the two of them together.
Right, so they were, but that's over 100 minutes.
We're
now in a partnership with the great people at Panoply and Slate, and they're always telling me, don't go too long. I don't think this has anything to do with you, Katie, or Fox,
it
or
doesn't.
Jamie Horowitz.
Now you're just taking time to talk about yourself.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I'm talent in this podcast. Let's talk about me. Quite frankly, I'm fantastic. All right, here we go. The Ray Rice, Roger Goodell video that you did touched a nerve with a lot of people, or maybe the better word is it resonated in the way John Oliver's sports piece not too long ago on stadiums and sports owners basically hijacking cities resonated. So this is a two-part question. Why do you think that commentary had such an impact for you? And two, it seems to me that there's a space for people like you to find to do these sports commentaries that can really catch on. So will we see you be doing more commentaries along a similar line?
All right, first part of that question, why do I think it resonated? I think that was a topic that everybody was talking about. It was, you know, I think we did that video just like day three of, I actually don't remember specifically where it was when the video came out and we had seen the video and the suspension, I believe. Anyway, everybody was talking about it 24/7 with their different takes. saying they think this is why or this is why. And it was just this constant circus. And so it felt strange as a woman and as an NFL fan and as a person who worked in this industry to not say anything. And I don't come from any place where I can have a sort of more educated stance on domestic violence than anybody else who had already been speaking. And so I didn't want to chime in just for the sake of chiming in. But from watching all of the coverage, I just noticed this pattern that was making me uncomfortable, that there were times that, you know, it looked like a woman would want to speak or say something and instead was just facilitating conversation. And after noticing that, especially in stark contrast with what the conversation was about, it just felt like it was a good time to point out the hypocrisy of a number of men saying that we need to treat women better and women not sharing in the conversation. It was just a weird thing I had observed, and I wanted to share my observation. I worked for like a day on writing that, and we at the time, Inside Information, didn't have a teleprompter, and I was really nervous about saying it frankly without making sure I said it specifically. It was very important to me to say exactly what I meant, and I worked really hard on making sure word for word it was what I wanted to say. So we had one of my producers sat under the camera and scrolled through the text on a laptop. So if you watch my eyes in that video, and it bothered me when we first filmed it, but I ended up getting over it, you can see I'm reading below the screen off of a computer screen. Because in a situation when you're talking about something very sensitive, you don't want to misspeak. And it was a very purposeful and pointed, I would say, essay that I wrote, and the only way I had to deliver it was on video. So anyway, the reason I'm telling you that story is I think it resonated because it was, a topic everybody was talking about, so it wasn't like, who's Ray Rice? What is she talking about? And it was a step back, and it was sort of a more grander scope, a big picture look at the major issue as opposed to just this specific issue. And I had a lot of people reach out to, like, ask me to do follow-up press surrounding the video, and it just felt, I was like, no, what? Why? It was a video. I wrote everything I wanted to say. I said it. Use it to facilitate conversations amongst yourselves. I'm not an expert in any way. I don't know the answers. I don't have more to say. I said everything I needed to say. It wasn't a short video. It was relatively long. I just wanted to start the conversation. And I got a lot of very, like, CNN called my parents' house in Framingham. Like, I was like, what is wrong with you? Just talk about it. Think about it, and then talk about it. I'm not who, and we now have on YouTube person Katie Nolan to talk about domestic violence. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Just was more about having a conversation that I didn't think was happening. Now, to answer in another long essay your second part of that question,
right?
There is definitely a space for that. For these reasoned essays or whatever you want to call them on a topic. For me, like I was telling you before, without having a research department and somebody to help me kind of do them constantly, I don't want to take a stance on a topic every week. It would feel very disingenuous. It wouldn't be true, and it wouldn't be something that really mattered to me if I was doing it every single week. So we had a couple during the show that were things that bothered me that, you know, we took the time and we researched and we did these long takes. But it's tough with the combination of a small team and a weekly turnaround to have to always be outraged about something. And the last thing I want is to come off as, like, the woman in sports with her own show who only talks about women's issues in sports. Because, you know, that's not true to who I am. I am a sports fan, and I have a number of issues with a number of things, not just women's issues in sports. Like, we did one thing which I would have loved to dive into deeper on the conflict of interest in sports and media and things like that. Like, these are things that really interest me. It's tough with the resources we have now to do what John Oliver or John Stewart could do, but, I mean, eventually my goal... and in this past month, I've been watching nonstop Jon Stewart videos, transcribing John Oliver rants, looking for their rhythms and their patterns and how they get from one part to another. The goal is to evolve into something that works that way and is really smart but also really funny. But right now it's just a matter of making sure I'm not ever taking a stance on something for the sake of taking a stance, because all that will do is cheapen anything I actually care about.
All right, and the final topic I want to get to is Twitter, because yeah, I know, and I understand that early in the conversation you said that you're sort of trying to take yourself a little bit away from that, and it's been healthy, and I can totally understand that. But many of the guests that I've had, and obviously many of the things that I write about for SI, I'm interested in women in the business because I think they face an inordinate amount of challenges compared to their male counterparts, including me, obviously. And one of those is what social media is for them, which is often a landmine. You and Michelle Beadle, to highlight two people, are very, very good, I feel like, at, I don't even know if the word is like deflecting, but it's really being proactive against a lot of the clown elements on Twitter. So social media, you have to have. Fox is telling you have to have it. You come from the internet in terms of for your stuff, for guyism and No Filter, et cetera. So that's your audience. So you need, I would argue, that world in social media. At the same time, it can be very difficult terrain to navigate. So how do you look at one, Twitter, and then maybe on a micro level, being a woman in the sports media and a prominent one on Twitter?
I would say that my experience with Twitter, this is tough to talk about and to not do it for a half an hour. I don't know so much that it's, again, I really can't speak to my being a woman because I've never been anything but. And I know that there are women who get it worse than I do. There are men who get it worse than I do. Like, I wouldn't trade places with Joe Buck and read his Twitter replies when he's calling a game. I just think social media is like most things, a blessing and a curse. I think it brings wonderful things into the world. I think it brings awful things into the world. And one of the awful things is it gives the greater audience a portal into your life and into your home. I was listening to the podcast you did with Rebecca Lowe, hearing her say how she doesn't have a Twitter account because right. She likes to come home and shut the door. And I got very, as I'm sitting listening to this podcast, looking at Twitter on my couch last night, I was like, yeah, I would love to shut the door. But the thing I found about Twitter, like the good thing about it is you get feedback. It keeps you on your toes. You know what I mean? Like if I'm talking to this audience for this audience, I mean, I'm not going to listen to everything everybody says because sometimes I think people just like to poke you and prod you. But I get interesting feedback, and some of it I take to heart. Some of it I have to brush off. My thing with trolls, the way you say that Beadle and I deflect them, if I see a troll say something that I know I can tee up and use for a joke, that's usually when I will retweet and make fun of that person, or like make fun of what they said and make people laugh. And a lot of times I'll get like, why do you acknowledge the trolls? Well, because they're going to exist regardless of whether I acknowledge them or not.
I agree.
Or if someone says, why acknowledge that person? He has 12 followers. I'm like, I don't judge people based on how many followers they have. And if you do, that's really weird. And that would also make me a really cool person. And I am not a really cool person. I just happen to have 100-something thousand followers. That doesn't make me any better than you. And if you think I think that way, why do you follow me? Because that would suck. I think it's, for me, it's if I see somebody say something that I can make a point that will educate other people. And I'm super naive. And I like to think that if I show people the way that they'll follow it, they won't. But if I see it as an opportunity to say, here's a problem that people don't understand that I run into, I do it. And also, just for the record, don't feed the trolls or don't acknowledge them is technically victim blaming. We should be mad at the trolls for saying nasty, awful things, not at people for reacting to the nasty, awful things they say. But that's another story for another podcast. The reason I will never stop checking my Twitter replies, one of them being that you said I come from the internet, it's how I came up. If it weren't for the internet or for Twitter, the good and the bad, I would not be here. And that's what's wonderful about it. The reason I'll always check my replies is because if I don't, I will miss that tweet from a young female sports journalist who's in college who tells me that she finally sees what she wants to do. She finally has a person to look up to. She loves that I tell people not to, you know, judge me for this. And then I would miss those tweets that when I see them, it honestly makes me say, even if one woman, one younger woman is knows what she wants to do and is going to come up and change the world because of something I did, one person, it makes all of the awful things completely worth it, because that is so cool. And just genuinely so cool to know that somebody somewhere is like, I want to be Katie Nolan. It's like, first of all, run that by your parents, because I don't know if they'll be cool with that. But second of all, that's fantastic. And most of the time I'll just tweet right back at the girl and be like, come by my studio. I don't know where you are. I don't know if you're in New York, but if it would benefit you to come watch us make a show, then come watch us make a show. I want to be an open resource to anybody who wants to follow the weird path I followed.
And ultimately, the business is best served when people pay it forward. So that's a cool thing. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who reach out to you. So if and when you do that, that's a cool thing. All right, Bette, before I finish up here, we have not done this in any of the 17 or 16 podcasts that we've held. You, Katie Nolan, for you was essentially Rob Ryan. So is there anything that you would like to ask her before we close this out? I mean, we've already gone really...
Am I your Rob Ryan?
Maybe.
Can I live up to it, or are you totally
One of this podcast, Bette has wanted one guest, Katie Nolan.
I will say. Katie, I will say, normally when Deitch hits about an hour, I try to start waving him off and, you know, telling him to, you know, hurry it up, speed it up.
Like an air traffic controller at LaGuardia.
You know, try and speed it up. But you know what? I think we've been running for like 75 minutes now, and okay. I'm still very, very much engaged, so... Thank you very much. You've been a great guest.
Wow.
Thank you so much.
She's no Peter.
I'm so happy to finally meet you.
Yeah.
And the thing that you just said about college students, gosh, that's so nice. You're like making me tear up over here. Jeez.
I know. I got a little teary. I was hoping you couldn't tell.
Bet she's talent. Don't believe anything she just said. All right. So let's wrap. First of all, we would have never gone 70 minutes with Peter Schrager. I'll be very honest.
I'm sorry.
At least maybe 17. All right. Katie Nolan.
Last longer than Carissa? That was my goal.
I have to be honest with you. Carissa was an incredibly great podcast guest because
she just talks.
She sounds
so confident all the time. I wish I had that.
Well, it's interesting that you and Carissa have more similarities as guests than you think, because you're both self-deprecating, but I think you both, and Carissa's different, but you both really disdain bullshit, and I think... It's important for you to, I mean, within, no one's truly 100% honest, but within that framework, both of you, I think, wanted the listeners to sort of get a sense of reality for you. That's why I liked about Carissa. You know, Carissa didn't have to talk about trying to make amends with Michelle Beadle, but she brought that up. She certainly didn't have to talk about dating Jay Williams and being in an interracial relationship. She brought that up. Those are things, Katie, as you know, media people never talk about publicly. So I like Carissa... personally, and I really loved her as a podcast guest.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful human.
And a Fox Sports colleague of yours.
Yes, she is.
I'm not going to lie. I don't love every Fox Sports colleague, but that's one I do. All right, Katie Nolan.
We know, Richard.
Yeah, Katie Nolan has been... Yeah, I didn't even get to some of the people I really dislike. Katie Nolan has been the guest of this podcast. She announced the news, and we really appreciate this. We're going to build this up on Friday when we release this.
I'm going to get... much trouble.
Fantastic.
I
know. It's great. That her show is moving to Wednesdays at midnight, which I think is a great spot. No MLS games. I'm running late that day.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way soccer runs late is if it's a 70-hour game from Spain. All right. So Katie Nolan's show moves in September on Wednesday. Check that out at midnight. She's the host of Garbage Time. She is the person Bette Marsden most wanted on this podcast, so we have accomplished a lot, and we are now running into the 75th minute, and I am bored of my own voice. Katie Nolan, thank you very much for being a guest on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, both of you.
Okay, the 2015 NFL kickoff is just a couple weeks away, and players are already building their teams on FanDuel for week 1. You can get in the action by using my code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, for a bonus of up to $200. Now, you've probably heard of FanDuel somewhere before. Here's what it's all about. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. It's one-week fantasy football where you can draft a new team anytime and compete with other fans for real cash. FanDuel will pay out over $75 million a week this season. And if you don't play fantasy football because you don't want the hassle of committing to a whole season, check out FanDuel. You can draft a team anytime. Drop in at tournaments for weekly cash prizes. Entry fees start at just $1. There's clearly a league for everyone. Over a million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Now it's your turn. What do? You go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and sign up now. Here's a special offer for listeners of the Sports Illustrated Media podcast. FanDuel will match every dollar you deposit up to $200 that gets earned as you play. The offer is good for the first 50 listeners who use my code MEDIA today, so don't get left out. Don't forget to use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Check it out today. All right, back in the studio for what will be a very short wrap-up. I'll bring Bette on, although Bette had more airtime than she's ever had on this podcast, but that was, I think, that I really enjoyed that. I like Katie Nolan a lot. I don't love everything she does. Not that I'm Mushnick or anybody else, but she's talented and she's honest and she's doing something unique and different and pioneering, and I totally respect that. And I, not that I love everything Fox does, but I really, really like the fact that they gave her her own vehicle. So I think that's awesome, and I think this time change will be great. That's my quick take on her. Let me, because we have to do this, let me thank the great people at Panoply, and especially Dan Bloom, who really is just a magnificent human being and helps executive produce this show, along with main producer Bette Marston, who I now bring in. Bette, Katie Nolan, again, was your Rob Ryan, and I thought she delivered. I'm not going to lie.
I agree. I love Katie Nolan because she's so unique in the sports landscape, and she's also incredibly refreshing, I think.
Agreed.
And that all of that came across, her whole personality came across in the podcast today. So I was very, very excited about that. And I really appreciate her humor. I mean, not everyone gets, you know, enjoys that type of humor, but I'm all about it. So
what about appreciating me as talent?
What?
All right, exactly. That's pretty much the relationship.
All right,
here.
Yeah.
No, all right, no. So we have some things to do before we get out of here. Thank you so much for your feedback on all these podcasts. Katie Nolan will be a very enjoyable listen for you. Fred Gadelli was the last podcast. David Shoemaker of Grantland, Shelley Smith, Adam Schefter, Vern Lundquist. We've had a lot of great podcasts, and if this is the first show you're listening to, please go check us out on iTunes, the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. You can go back and listen to all of them. We're also on SoundCloud as well. Bette and I want feedback for this podcast, even if it's criticism. Please hit us up at Richard Deitch, RichardDeitsch, at Bette Marston, BetteMarston. I thank our sponsors, FanDuel and SeatGeek, for jumping on this podcast, and we appreciate them supporting us and supporting the Sports Illustrated Podcast Network. We have, I think, bet like 9 or 11 now, whatever the podcasts are, but from the SI Vault to the college football one to Monday Morning Quarterback, please listen to all of them. We're relatively new in the podcast game, but awesome that our bosses and our organization have committed to it, so we're going to continue to get better at this, I think. And provide you with really good entertainment. All right, for Katie Nolan, for my producer Bette Marston, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you next time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.